Abime Herzog, teure Freund und Seeherre, welcome in Greece. David Mandelbaum speaking to you from the Pocono Mountains. If you hear thunder, it's not the wrath of God. And it's nice to be on the air again and speak to all of you out there who are not listening. Today, I would like to try and retrack, you know, the last show that I broadcast was from Montreal, and it was just before I went on to do Yossel Rocker Speaks to God, and it was a bit of a diatribe. I really enjoyed it, but it got me kind of off track. I wanted to speak more about the festival and what was going on there. It was quite an interesting experience, and it said a lot about Yiddish theater and the state of Yiddish culture. Some very optimistic things and some things that need to be addressed. Let's go down a list of the countries that were actually represented there: the United States, Poland, Romania, Australia, Austria, Canada, of course, Israel. Am I leaving anyone out? I hope not. France, of course, France. And I think that about tops off the list. There was film, music, theater, and a symposium dealing with various aspects of Yiddish culture. As far as the theater was concerned, there were some wonderful, wonderful shows. For the most part, solo shows. I think the best show in the festival was Avi Hoffman's show about the life of Itzhak Manger, which was written by his mother, Miriam Hoffman. For me, far and away, the winner. And that's hard for me to say because obviously I also did a show there. But I thought it was a spectacular show, and Avi Hoffman's a wonderful entertainer. He also performed Too Jewish, which is, I mean, he kills them. The audience just eats it up. It's light entertainment. A lot of reminiscing, a lot of American Yiddish culture, but highlighted by some wonderful bits. He does a Menashe Skolnik routine that is out of this world. I couldn't get over it. So really, Avi did a wonderful, wonderful job at the festival, and I envy his chops. I really do. Rafal Goldwasser was there with Gogol from Anigin, and he also did a wonderful recitation. As a matter of fact, the first morning of the festival, he did a recitation in which he recited works by various Yiddish poets, and it was just out of this world. Gilgul von Anigin is his multimedia show based on I.L. Peretz's short story, The Metamorphoses of a Melody. Wonderful story, really, and it was portrayed very, very, very vividly and very artfully in his show. He did the show at the Fringe Festival last year. He did it at the Volksbühne for a couple of weeks, two or three weeks. And he is now working on a new show based on Itzhak Manger's Chumash Lieder, the Bible stories. There was a very well-known show, well, perhaps not to all of you who aren't listening here, but certainly it was a huge success in its time, and hopefully it'll come back someday. And it also had to do with Avi Hoffman and his mother. His mother wrote it. along with someone else who I apologize if I can't remember. But it was produced at the Public Theater in New York. It was called Songs of Paradise, and it was also based on Mangel's Chumash Lieder. So Rafal's working on that, and we are working on a joint project, a co-project of New Yiddish Rep and the Lufttheater in Strasbourg, France, which we hope to bring to New York in the fall. Let's see, there was, of course, I did Yossel Rockver Speaks to God, which is a solo show that I've been performing for the last several years. There was a solo show by, which I didn't get to see because it was on at the same time as Yossel Rockver, called Song of Songs, and it was done by a very promising young Polish actor. I wish I had had a chance to see it. I saw him subsequently in another production of theirs. It was heartening to see a young actor from Poland who was born and lives in Poland with such fluency in Yiddish and such a great passion for Yiddish and Yiddish theater. And I'm sorry I missed his curtain speech at the Song of Songs. After the show, he said to the audience how thrilled he was that for the first time he was performing for an audience that actually understood Yiddish. We could talk a lot about that. That says a lot of things, but I was very impressed with him, I hope that he will continue to grow and has the opportunity to grow as an actor and as a Yiddish actor. So those were some of the solo shows. I hope I'm not forgetting any. There were shows from another French company from Paris did the Schreusser Gewinns, a very well-known Shalom Aleichem play. A young woman, a tremendous talent named Milena Kartovsky from Paris, did a show called a show all about food, a musical review all about food called The Chillant Gang. And she's someone to watch for. She's going to be a great, great star of our Yiddish theater, and I think a great innovator of Yiddish theater. She's a young woman, and I think she's got a bright future. There was the Romanian company. They did a couple of shows. They were fine. They were fun. They were okay. It was not that easy to understand the Yiddish, as was the case the last time they came. You know, it's interesting to think about. Here is the Jewish State Theater of Bucharest, which has a staff, I understand, of 150 permanently employed people paid by the state, and doing Yiddish theater for I don't know whom, for tourists, most of them, I assume, not Jewish. However, unfortunately, the level of Yiddish is very poor, and I'm not afraid to say it. They could use some help, and it would be nice if there were an international center of Yiddish theater and Yiddish culture that could provide that kind of help. And people have been talking about it for a long time. It's been bandied about, and there are even people who claim to be doing it, but it's simply not so. It is something that we need to do. We need to establish an international institution dealing with the Yiddish theater, dealing with not only the Yiddish theater past, but the Yiddish theater future. And it's not that difficult. It wouldn't be that difficult to do. Well, there's been a lot of talk about it in the past. Unfortunately, the will to do it, I think, is muddy. There's a lot of, protection of turf going on. People are afraid, I think, that they're going to lose something by participating in a joint effort, an international effort. Incidentally, Yiddish Spiel was at the festival. Leave me not forget Yiddish Spiel. They also did Itzik Munger. They did the Megillah of Itzik Munger. That's a very well-known play that was first done by the Burstyn family, of whom Mike Burstyn is a scion. It was performed in Israel at first, and it was actually, every performance, they didn't know whether or not they would be closed down because it was illegal to perform in Yiddish in Israel at that time. And they were liable to be closed and heavily fined for doing so. Fortunately, that's no longer the case today. But it certainly says something about the confused history and ideas and notions that our people have fallen prey to, and we could go on about that, and maybe I will a little later on. But before I do, and before I forget, I'd like to talk about some of the things coming up in this summer. You know, summer's a tremendous time for Yiddish festivals and convocations and let's see, right now. Let's see, there's something going on in Krakow, the Krakow Festival. There'll be something going on in Warsaw, in Weimar, in Brussels, in London. Let's see, where else? So there's the Quez Canada. There's, you know, if you care to look it up, I'm sure I'm missing quite a few of them. Every summer, the same people run around to the same festivals, and it's hard for me to understand what the lasting good it does us is. I'm sure there is some. First of all, people meet each other, and those meetings and the relationships that develop from them, I'm sure produce interesting work. But I'm a bit confused as to what the real contribution these things make, other than to make us feel good and make some of the Goyim who destroyed us feel good. I just don't get it too much. But anyway, we got some things happening here in the States. On July 14th is the beginning of Gullis Festival. Gullis Festival is something that the young folks at Yiddish Farm, which I am proud to be a part of. I'm the Alta Kaka there. They don't listen to me at all, but that's okay. They have organized a Yiddish festival that will be happening in Goshen, New York. It's not too far from New York City. It's just about an hour and 15 from town. You can actually go up for a day if you like. To register, you can go to yiddishfarm.org /registration HTML. And for more information, you can go to yiddishfarm.org /Gullus, GullusFAQ.html. Just go to yiddishfarm.org, and I'm sure you'll be able to find all the information. There'll be things. There'll be workshops, dancing, hide stretching, cooking, agriculture, languages. We're going to do a Yiddish theater workshop. We'll have music by Pete Kraszewski, Matt Temkin's Yiddish Jam Band, Asefa, and Stereo Sinai, among others. It should be a wonderful few days of culture and talk and ideas. And it's in my view, these young folks, are the future of Yiddish culture. And New Yiddish Rep is proud to be a supporter of this event. And involved in Yiddish Farm, in August, we'll be doing the Yiddish Farm, the three-week program that they've undertaken, gets started. The first week, we will be doing a Yiddish theater workshop as well. I'm sure you'll be able to find out about that on their website. And let's see, there is going to be a screening of a new movie. It's going to open at the Lincoln Plaza Cinema, Shalom Aleichem, Laughing in the Darkness. It's a new film about the life of Shalom Aleichem. It's going to be playing from July 8th to July 14th at the Lincoln Plaza Cinemas. You can find out about that just by going to LincolnPlazaCinema.com. And then there's another movie that will be getting screened. It is a movie called David, and it will be screened in September. I have a little part in it. So, you know, if you do go, it'll be screened every day from Friday, September 9th, through Thursday, September 15th. It's a beautiful little movie, and it's has to do more with it doesn't have a lot to do with Yiddish culture per se, but it's just to, not to give it away, it's about a Muslim kid who befriends a bunch of Jewish kids, and they all think that the Muslim kid is Jewish, and that's as much as I'll say about it. Of course, they find out at the end that he isn't, but the movie's very involved, and it deals with Jewish culture and Islamic culture and the various travail that that afflicts us all in our efforts to be human beings and get along with each other. It's a very heartwarming movie, and I hope some of you will go see it. And, of course, the Yiddish Romeo and Juliet will be opening at the Lincoln Center Cinemas in the next couple of weeks, I believe. And you can also find out more about that by going to Lincoln Center's Cinemas website. That's made quite a splash, that movie. It's interesting that it was shown up in Montreal. It's been at many festivals around the world. It's caused made quite an impression. I haven't seen it for reasons that I will not go into, that are just matters of principle rather than personal matters of principle rather than anything else. But I urge the rest of you to go see it. I think it's worth seeing. I've seen bits and pieces of it, and I've only heard good things about it. So, having said that about what's going on in the world of Yiddish, Unquest Canada comes up at the end of August, as does Yiddish Vach. Yiddish Vach you can find about through jugendtreff.org. jugendtreff.org. Jugendtreff is a yearly meeting, a weekly meeting of Yiddish speakers. It's Yiddish immersion. You're only supposed to speak Yiddish. I say suppose most people make an effort, and I think that making an effort is the key. You know, it's interesting that at the Montreal Festival, one did not hear a lot of Yiddish. There were people did speak in Yiddish, and whenever I had the chance to speak with someone in Yiddish, I did. But there are a lot of Yiddish speakers in Montreal, and you didn't hear much of it. So it's interesting. Yiddish Vach, on the other hand, is designed to be a Yiddish immersion experience. But the key is to try, even if you only know a little bit of Yiddish. Being in a environment in which you're subjected to the language day in and day out can only help you improve. And my Yiddish is not that fluent. I am not, my grammar is not good, or my vocabulary is lacking. But I try when I am with Yiddish speakers to speak Yiddish. No, mit darf probieren zu reden. Als nicht kämen, nicht verbessern. in das ist der Hauptsache, man muss probieren, man muss gehen weiter. Ja, es ist schwer, ein Sachmut zu brechen in die Zähne. Aber also verbessert man in der Sprache, in persönlich, ich hoffe, dass heute du Menschen, die trachten, als nein, ich kenne nicht, ich rede nicht, als euch geht, ich muss ja noch Team dort, ich soll nicht verstehen, sorge nicht, es ist eine Reihe, Leute zu hören, ein jüdisch Wort. Ich weiß nicht, ich habe nicht Werte. Es ist so eine teure Sache, als ein Kind zusammen mit anderen Menschen, man hört Mamaluschen, man hört ältere Menschen, man hört kleine Kinder noch, was reden in Jiddisch. Es ist etwas, ich habe nicht Werte von dem. So, look, give it a try. Try it your best to... use your Yiddish whenever you can. And, don't be embarrassed. We can only improve our situation by being proud of as much as we know, not ashamed of how little we know. So, having said that, let me move forward and speak a little more about some of the things that we've been doing at New Yiddish Rep. We are still, of course, continuing with our Yiddish Theater Workshop. And that's been a weekly gathering. We've so far done the Dybbuk. We've read the Dybbuk. We've read Gottfried Mikuma. And now we're reading Uriel Acosta. Now, the workshop begins every Thursday before Shulam. It begins with an acting class at 7, and at 8 o'clock, we begin to read. We begin to read the plays. It's been interesting to see the range of people who have been coming to this. It has been young Yiddishists, some of my young colleagues from Jugendtreff, from Yiddish Farm, and also some people from the Hasidic community. And my chief thrill in this activity is to see how the people who come from a Hasidic background and who grew up speaking Yiddish, yet have absolutely no knowledge of Yiddish literature or Yiddish theater, how they react to the plays that we read. It's really wonderful to see how they react. It's like all of a sudden a new world has opened up to them. And it makes me, it's extremely gratifying to see that happen. Right now we're reading Uriel Acosta, an interesting play originally written in German, translated into Yiddish, and now was at one time one of the most popular plays on the Yiddish stage. Hasn't been done for an awful long time, who knows, but we're reading it now. The next play we're going to read is going to be a play called Baruch von Amsterdam, about Baruch Spinoza. Uriel Acosta, of course, was a Portuguese Murano who came to Amsterdam with his family, and was accused of being a heretic for his views about rabbinic Judaism. Baruch Spinoza was 8 years old when Acosta eventually shot himself. He was quite tortured by his separation from the Jewish community, came back, and left again, and... the play pretty documents fairly well the actual events, although some of it is fictional. I thought it would be a nice idea to continue with a play about Baruch Spinoza, Benedictus Spinoza. And his experiences with the Jewish community of Amsterdam. One of the interesting things about these plays is that they're in Yiddish, and they're talking of a Sephardic community from Spain and Portugal. So it's interesting. But the play that we're reading now was written in the 1840, I believe, and Baruch von Amsterdam was written in the 1930s. So there is a continued interest in the history of those days and the fate of heretics. Yes, it's every Thursday. It's the New Yiddish Rep Children Theater Workshop. If you want to be on the mailing list, we are itinerant. That is to say that we do not have a permanent home. So every Wednesday we send out an email to those interested, telling them where we will be meeting the following day. So if you want to be put on that mailing list, please write in to info@newyiddishrep.org or go to our website, newyiddishrep.org. And there's a little button there you can press to be put on the mailing list. And I'll be happy to put you on the list. And if you're interested, send you the PDFs of those works which we are reading. It's a bit of a problem, it's hard to know how to get around it. There are a lot of people, I think, who would be very interested who simply can't read Yiddish. They might understand a bit of Yiddish. They might be able to read through a transliterated text with Roman character, English characters. Unfortunately, not every play has a transliteration. So it's difficult, and I'm trying to figure out a way, and if anybody has any suggestions or ideas. One of our big problems is how do you get people to participate in Yiddish culture that simply don't speak Yiddish and were never exposed to it? How do you get them to become interested? How do you draw them in if you only speak in Yiddish? Which leads to a very interesting question that a young woman at the festival brought up at lectures at the symposium. Her name is Avia Moore, and she talks about the transformation of Yiddish theater and Yiddish culture, and how we need to start looking forward as well as trying to preserve what we have from our past. This is not a very easy thing to do. And the last couple of weeks at Children's, I've been trying to talk to people about it. And really the question becomes, what is Yiddish culture? What is Jewish culture? How do we define them? Notions like, do plays that aren't Yiddish, can they actually be considered Yiddish plays? Some people just throw up their hands and say, what are you talking about? Other people think about it for a minute. It's a terribly confusing and not an easy thing to deal with, and it's not an easy thing to think about. My own personal view is very simplistic, being a very simple person. Western Yiddish culture, Western Jewish culture, Ashkenazic culture, is steeped in 1,000 years of diaspora history. I don't see how anyone can deny it. Now, you can say we need to forget about it. You can say that it is to our shame, as some people have. You can say, well, that's something we need to be ashamed of and forget about and walk away from. And I've received emails when I sent out notices about Yiddish events. I remember one person writing me, I hate Yiddish, I don't want to know about Yiddish, and how dare you send me an email about Yiddish, and so on and so forth. How can you respond to something like this? It's very difficult to. It's heartbreaking. But anyway, that's my view of it. There is nothing that has happened in Ashkenazic culture that isn't steeped in our diaspora history and our experience of the diaspora and the language that we spoke in the diaspora. Even our American, our experience here in America is steeped in Eastern European culture, and we got to figure out a way to bring all these things together so that we can, you know, into a soup that will evolve new life, out of which new life will spring. And I think much to, I'm very happy about it, and I'm very optimistic about it. There are a lot of young people who are thinking about this and who are working on it and who are determined to go forward with it. The key is that they not become discouraged. Hopefully their voices will be so strong and so insistent that they will force the establishment, the what I call the Yiddish establishment and the Jewish culture establishment, to listen to them and to work with them and learn from them. And that's my hope. I'm hoping to learn as much as I can from these young people. I'm kind of a dinosaur myself, and I don't fool myself about it. My chief value can only be to bridge, if I have any, is to be kind of a bridge to something that they can look back, someone that they can look at and look back to. And I am by no means an authority. There are a lot of people who are repositories of knowledge of Yiddish culture and Yiddish history, and their value has to be recognized, and their wisdom and experience has to be honored and listened to. But it's the young people, it's the youngsters that have a fire in the belly that feel that they've lost the world and want to regain that world. These are the young people, these are the people that are going to move us into the future. And I hope that I will make a small contribution in that regard. Interesting thing I want to get back to, Yiddishspiel is planning a festival in 2013 for its 25th anniversary. They're also planning a festival in Tel Aviv, and they're going to do another one of these things. The Yiddish world is a world in right now in flux, especially the Yiddish theater world in flux, and in conflict. And I think one of the things we ought to be trying to do, although I'm not very good at it, so I'm not one to talk, is, here's a little song that I dedicate to the world of Yiddish theater and Yiddish culture, and maybe we should listen to the words. It's a little ditty by Talia and Kol Aviv, and it just says very simply, hey, let's bury the hatchet. let's forgive each other. Don't stand by the door. Put on the samovar. Let's not be foolish. Well, that's something that I think the world of Yiddish culture needs to start taking in. It's hard for me to explain. There are a couple of different trends. If you ask some of the veteran Yiddish performers, people who regularly perform in Yiddish, and I've had Raphael Goldwasser on the show in an interview, and he said the very first thing I said to him, what's the future of Yiddish theater? He said, there is no future of Yiddish. And I've heard this from many people who think very simply that, look, those of us who still perform in Yiddish, we need to go around and make a few dollars while we can, because after us, it's over. And I think that is an attitude that is prevalent in many ways among many of the Yiddish organizations. I think they see the future of Yiddish culture as academic, and basically, après moi, le déluge, you know, after us, it's going to be over. This is a very unfortunate attitude. It's understandable. The number of Yiddish speakers in the world isn't getting any larger, despite the self-congratulatory statements made by, oh, there's so many more Yiddish programs. And yeah, but there's so many more Yiddish programs, but it's the same number of people among all these programs. It has not expanded the number of people participating in actively in learning Yiddish, in thinking about Yiddish culture. We need to find ways to bring people in. We need to find ways to draw them to back to their roots. And one of the things that we have to be cognizant of, and we can't avoid, despite however much we may want to, people, young Jewish folks, aren't attracted to Zionism, and they aren't attracted to Yiddish culture. They are unaffiliated, I guess, is the kindest word that you can say about it. What's going to be? What are we going to? How are we going to say to these people? Come on, you have a tradition, you have a history that's worth looking into. A certain number of people you'll never convince, and they will be lost to the culture. But find a way to stop the continued isolation of Israel. And make no mistake, someone said to me the other day that we were talking about Tony Kushner and the whole controversy about the City University and them, certain people on the board wanting to deny him an honorary degree because of his statements about Israel. Well, we're talking about that, and someone said to me, believe me, I'm not sanguine about the survival of Israel. Let me tell you, none of us ought to be sanguine about it. Israel, I think, is finding itself continually in isolation, and it's a serious problem. At the same time, I am not advocating, this does not say that I sympathize with Muslim extremists in Gaza or Hamas, or I'm not particularly thrilled with either of them, because there is a word that it seems it's hard for them to understand. It's hard for them to understand the word reasonable. Let's be reasonable. Well, reasonable is, you did this to me and you did that to me. And I was like, well, you're doing this and you're doing. everybody has got a very compelling argument why there shouldn't be peace, why there shouldn't be a solution. I don't know. It's difficult, but the more Israel becomes isolated, the tougher things are going to get for us all, I believe. And I am not a Zionist by any means, and I do not adhere to the silly Zionist notions about the diaspora culture and what a tragedy it was. I'm still waiting for Israel to make Yiddish an official language of the state. I don't think it would be a bad idea for them to do so. Ladino is unfortunately pretty much gone. What's keeping Yiddish alive is, of course, the Hasidic community, which contributes of the estimated 2 million Yiddish speakers. The great majority of them are members of Hasidic sects. But as I said, their knowledge of Yiddish culture and the history, Yiddish history is very limited. Jewish history in the diaspora is very limited. And, they can tell you what this Rebbe said 300 years ago, and that Rebbe said 300 years ago, but they're not... They haven't the faintest notion of people like Peretz and Shalom Aleichem and Mendel. It's just not on their horizon. Anyway, I don't mean to ramble on, and I didn't mean really to get into this tangent, but the problem is that we need to find a new ideology to attract the young people that we are losing. And I don't think that ideology is Israel. I don't really know if just the old Yiddishist stubborn adherence to if it's not Yiddish, it's not Yiddish culture. I don't think that's going to work either. So we have to find a way, and we have to find a way that is gentle and non-judgmental. That's the way I see it. I wish I could be more articulate about it. I think a lot of this still has to evolve into a coherent and cohesive reality. But the good news is that it's cooking, it's percolating. What I hope is that it will get more and more support from Jewish foundations and the various Yiddish establishment organizations, and it will result in a true renaissance of Yiddish culture and undergo the same kind of transformative phase that klezmer has undergone over the last 30 years. And the klezmer is now a very vibrant and strong presence in the world music scene. Of course, music is... People will say, no, music is easy because everybody understands music. Everybody can be, there are no words involved. It's a universal language. We have to find a way to bring the rest of Yiddish culture, to give it a universal language, to give it a universality that goes beyond the language itself. The word I'm hearing, that I have not yet been familiar with until very recently, is post-vernacular. I don't know what that means. I really don't. What I take it to mean is that there are different ways of expressing what has been transmitted to us over 1,000 years, and not all of them have to do with the language it's spoken. Where that goes to, I don't know, but I'm struggling to find a way to begin working on it. And one of those ways is I'm planning, and with a lot of help from a lot of people, a play reading festival in the fall. And we are going to read plays from French playwrights, English playwrights, Israeli playwrights, Yiddish playwrights, and Argentinian playwrights, Russian playwrights, some of them in Yiddish, some of them in English, hopefully some of them in Hebrew, and begin thinking about, I hope, begin thinking about how all of these different theatrical efforts begin to form a picture of where Jewish culture and the history of our diaspora, our Ashkenazic diaspora, has brought us. So a lot of these things are involved with what is Yiddish culture? How is it different from Jewish culture? Is there a difference? And it's an argument that I'm sure will rage on, but somewhere I'm hoping something will evolve from it. And I can tell you some of the plays that we'll be working on. One play by a Israeli playwright named Mundi, Yosef Mundi. It's called Zem Istovev. It goes around. The play takes place in an insane asylum, and there are three characters. The two main characters are inmates of this asylum who have been put in a room together as part of their therapy. One of them is Theodor Herzl, and the other one is Franz Kafka. And you can imagine the comic situation that arise from that, but also it's what this play, when it first opened in Israel, was banned. The Supreme Court then said, no, you can't do that, freedom of speech, and we're a democracy, so, you know, it was played there. It expresses some very serious notion about, you know, Theodor Herzl's vision, and it's an interesting play. It's very funny. It's very serious at the same time. You know, tragical, comical, tragical, and all of that. But something that is apropos is that this year is the 100th anniversary of Franz Kafka's speech on Yiddish theater. He gave a little talk on Yiddish theater 100 years ago. Not many people know that he was exposed to Yiddish theater when an itinerant Yiddish theater company came to Prague. And he actually saw 11 Yiddish plays, most of which we still have. I think one of them has disappeared, but most of them are plays that you can read today. From that association, he became very friendly with the leader of the company. He became enamored with one of the actresses. He formulated some. A series about Yiddish theater, and he gave a speech about it. So I think it's quite apropos to see him as a character in a play by an Israeli playwright. Hopefully some of you will be able to see that. We're going to do some plays by a French playwright. They will be American premieres, and they will be in English and in Yiddish. One of the pieces will be translated into Yiddish. I'd like to do it in French if I thought it made any sense. If I could convince anyone to do it, I would. And of course, there'll be some Yiddish plays. There'll be the collaboration on Shalom Aleichem's Eisenbahngeschichte between the Lusttheater and New Yiddish Rep. I'm hoping that by presenting all these things, even without having to say much about them, simply by presenting them in juxtaposition to each other, there will be, it will create some kind of conversation. I'd love to bring Avia Moore's production of Adibic, to which he did what looked to be like a wonderful production of Adibic with five women. The play was spoken in English except for the Dybbuk, who spoke in Yiddish. I saw photos. They were just gorgeous, the concepts that she had for the set and the costumes. You know, there's a lot of work going on out there, and people deserve a continuing opportunity to present this work and to work with each other. I was thinking to myself that the people that appeared at the festival, people like Avi Hoffman and Rafael Goldwasser and Mendy Kahan, I neglected to mention Mendy Kahan, did a wonderful hour of music and recitation. Just such a charming, charming performer, a man who can charm you in several languages. this young Polish actor, some of the actors from Australia, if they had the opportunity to get together in a central location and explore Yiddish theater and the future of Yiddish theater, we would be seeing marvelous, marvelous work coming up. But no institution exists that will allow them to do so. And this leads to a whole other discussion. I have a few minutes left, and I guess I'll save something for 2 weeks from now. In the meantime, I hope that we'll be broadcasting in 2 weeks from the Golis Festival in Goshen, New York, and we'll have a whole lot of guests, and you'll be hearing a whole lot of opinions on this in Yiddish and in English, but hopefully mostly in Yiddish. Those of you who aren't listening, tell your friends about it 2 weeks from today, 6 o'clock Eastern Time. And it should be a fun show up there. I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to the festival. So this whole idea of having a central place, of having an institution that concentrates on bringing artists together so that they can work together over a longer period of time than a week or 10 days or even 3 weeks, and really begin to evolve a new approach to our theater and our art. You know, the question becomes, how do you go about doing that? And what kind of thing has to happen in the way we think about it? And one of the things we have to start to understand is that we need to retrench. We need to stop thinking in terms of grandiose things and really think much more simply and make the work and the ability to be together and work the focal point of our effort, while we are trying to build the physical plant that we need to get this done. You know, we need a permanent home for Yiddish theater and culture, for the Yiddish performing arts in New York. Well, there's been a lot of talk about it. It just has never gotten done. While we're talking about it, we have to realize that if we want to do more Yiddish theater, we cannot do this with a few weeks of Yiddish theater a year and a reading here and a reading there. We need to try and convince all the people who care about this that we need to work together, and we need to work on a smaller scale so that the efforts that we make are made, well, you know, it's hard to talk about this without starting to get into, it's hard to not begin saying things that people are going to react to. Well, how can you say this? We need to, first of all, have a discussion that's calm, that recognizes that some of the things that have been done and are being done are not the right way to approach things. And before that recognition takes place, I don't know that there's going to be much. But suffice it to say that there are a lot of good things happening, and there's a lot to look forward to. And on that note, I'm going to take you out with a very sad tune, again by Psy Korolenko, and to heck with sad. Don't mind the dead ear.
What care I who make the laws of a nation, that those who will take care of its right and wrong? What care I who cares for the world's affairs, as long as I can obtain its popular applause? Let me sing a funny song with crazy words that roll along, and if my song can start you laughing, I'm happy, happy. Let me sing a sad refrain, a broken heart will love in vain, and if my song can start you crying, I'm happy. Let me croon a low-down blues that lifts you out of your feet. If my blues can reach your shoes and start you tapping your feet, I'm happy. Let me sing a Dixie's charm, a cotton field, and Mammy Darn.
Well, that, of course, was the great Jolson, and he made you happy, and now we'll make you sad.
In the kingdom of immense humanity's weeping. A terrible chasm abides. It couldn't be darker, it couldn't be deeper. It is stained with a bloody red tide. So much of the sea has been filled with the sorrow endured by the suffering Jews. But only the tears of the poor ones are bloody. The rich cry as clear as the dew.
So, all you poor suffering Jews out there, and I am one of you, I bid you a very good evening, a very happy 4th of July. Tomorrow, there'll be a chillin' barbecue in Prospect Park, and that'll start around 5 o'clock. Those of you who are in New York City and want to find out more about it, email me at info@newyorkshop.org, and I'll tell you where to go. Should be a lot of fun. Starts at 5, and it'll go on till they throw us out of the park. So have a great evening, and it's been a pleasure speaking to all of you folks out there who aren't listening. Good night.